It's arbitrary. That's what it is. It's that, and that's the problem I have with it. If I go into a McDonald's and it is 10:31, what has changed so dramatically in that kitchen that I can no longer get an Egg McMuffin? It makes no sense to me.
What's happened is you've gone back in time because it's actually now spreading. By October, every McDonald's in the country is going to serve breakfast 24 hours a day.
Are you serious?
I'm dead fucking serious. Why would I joke to one of my fellow junk food aficionados about the fact that you can get an Egg McMuffin at any goddamn hour of the day now?
That's good, because you know what? When it comes to time, McDonald's is not the law. They do not make the laws.
I'm the law.
I'm the law.
This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Everybody, welcome to Junk Food Cinema here on FilmSchoolRejects.com. This is the weekly cult and exploitation.
And bad segue podcast.
Yeah, this is the...
What was that? I have no idea.
Welcome to the first episode of Tripping Over Our Tongues, the improv comedy and speech impediment podcast here on FilmSchoolRejects.com that is so good, it just flaps... I am your host, Brian Spraspalsperperi. And I am joined once again by my friend and co-host...
Cargill.
Cargill. Lieutenant of Megvifor. Wow. We are off to...
We're doing an entire podcast like
this. This is exactly how I thought we would... This is the start I thought we would get off to. So, no, I'm not surprised at all.
I have no... I guess we're making fun of Stallone at this point.
Really? I think we're just that bad at this. I think we started off thinking we could disguise it as a bad Stallone impression, or maybe poking, but no, it's just us and our shortcomings. But if you would like to hear more of those shortcomings, you can actually find back cataloged episodes on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. And guys, please keep those tweets coming. I love the stuff that you guys are tweeting at us, suggestions you're making. I get all the time people like, hey, I just saw this movie. Have you guys seen this? And it's like, yes, let's talk about that. So thank you very much for doing that. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema, and definitely use those Amazon links that we have on the page. Even if you don't buy that item, anything you buy from Amazon, if you got there from our link, benefits us, and we appreciate it. So we're continuing through this sort of random movie month that we're doing. I know last week we talked about The Rocketeer, and interestingly enough, today's movie is also based on a comic book. We kind of have an accidental unity going on from week to week.
Really? That was accidental?
It was. I just picked two movies that I absolutely love and haven't had a chance to talk about now, and it only dawned on me afterwards that, oh, wait a minute, they're both based on comic books. This one is Dread.
$800 million people living in the ruin of the old world. Only one thing fighting for order in the chaos. The men and women of the Hall of Justice.
Now, I want to make very clear what I'm saying to you right now. When I say Dread, I mean the 2012 film directed by Pete Travis, starring Carl Urban.
Dread. Not Judge Dread,
which you may remember from 1995, starring Sylvester Stallone. And it's going to be very important, actually, that we kind of discuss a little bit about both movies, because in order to understand what makes Dread, just Dread, so good, you have to kind of understand what made Judge Dread so bad. And that is entirely what we're going to be talking about today. But let's start off just with Dread itself. Now, if you're not familiar with the character of Judge Dread, this is a character that first appeared in a British magazine called 2000 AD, and there's a lot of different sort of origins I've heard about where Dread came from. Apparently the look of Dread with that helmet and just kind of that really cut jawline and that imposing figure was actually based upon David Carradine in Death Race 2000, his Frankenstein character, which I thought was really cool because that's one of my favorite cult movies. And then also, the character himself, who lives in a post-apocalyptic future where law enforcement is basically a one-person job. I mean, these judges, as they're called, are, in fact, judge, jury, and executioner. They take care of all the law enforcement. They streamline it, often dispatching very totalitarian-type justice. And there was he's apparently based upon Dirty Harry, Clint Eastwood's character as well. So there's a lot of different things that are going on to create this character, which became very, very popular. It was created by Carlos, I always mispronounce his last name, and I'm very sorry, Esquerra, I believe is how you pronounce it. And, you know, at various times, you've had a lot of really amazing comic book artists working on Judge Dredd. People like, you know, Garth Ennis and just, I mean, you name it. I mean, some of the biggest names in the industry at one point worked on, you know, 2000 AD.
Well, because everybody kind of wanted to.
Yeah.
It was, everybody loved what was going on at 2000 AD, and everybody really wanted to work on Dredd, because Dredd was both one of those great anti-heroes at the same time that he was a critique of fascism.
Yes.
And the rising right-wing movement of the 80s that we're seeing the dying echoes of in politics today. That
yes.
We're seeing this ideology that's kind of on its last wobbly legs before, you know, it gets replaced by something else. And this was the rise of it, you know, with we had Reagan over here, and over there they had Thatcher.
Yes.
And this was a guy who was kind of the post-apocalyptic end-all be-all of those ideologies.
Yeah.
And that at the same time was very Dirty Harry. Like, the people he was going against were so kind of crooked and wrong that you wanted to see
him. Ends justifying the means kind of thing.
You wanted to see him blow holes in these people.
Yeah, I mean, very much like Charles Bronson's America, you know?
Yes.
And Reagan, I think, between Reagan and Thatcher, absolutely the catalyst, the common enemy that gave birth to Dredd as a satirical figure. Just hyper-violent comic book. I haven't read a lot of it. I will be honest. I haven't read a lot of it. But what I have read, it's exactly the kind of thing you would expect to be born of the 80s. I mean, he's a totalitarian character. He's a very violent comic book. But at the same time, you understand there's this sort of underlying wink and nudge about how, like, isn't this ridiculous? This is the time we actually live in, if you're not seeing that. Now, the first movie that was made in 95 was... Stallone didn't know who the fuck Judge Dredd was. And obviously, the studio at the time is not going to allow someone as expensive as Sylvester Stallone was to keep a helmet. Like, that's one of the things about Dredd. He never took that helmet off. I mean, that was one of the defining...
Dredd was the helmet.
He was the helmet. And that all kind of feeds into this idea of him being a cog in a machine. Is like, he is the uniform. That's all he really... The most defining characteristic of Dredd is the uniform that makes him the same as everybody else. Like, that's a very strong message to send, you know, as a comic book character. But of course, Stallone is not going to keep the helmet on. He's going, you know, you paid for his mug, you're going to get his mug. Now, jump forward ahead. Like, there are things to like about the Judge Dredd movie. A lot of them sort of like at the movie's expense kind of appreciation. But, you know, jump ahead a few years and kind of a personal anecdote. I remember Fantastic Fest when Red was showing, and Carl Urban was there to promote Red. And it had just been announced that they were going to do a new Judge Dredd movie with Carl Urban. And I remember thinking, I don't know that that's really going to work. Not because of Carl Urban, but just because something about that character seemed a little maybe out of date, maybe a little like maybe there was too much damage done by the Stallone movie. Just something, I don't know, something was rubbing me the wrong way about it. And then I actually got to sit down and interview Urban, and I just asked him about Dredd, and he went off on this tangent about how much he loved that comic book as a kid and about all these things they were going to do. And he said, in no uncertain terms, I told them that I would only play the role if Dredd keeps his helmet on the whole time. So you go from an actor like Stallone, who is willing to throw away the one defining characteristic about a character in order to achieve more screen time, even as established as he was, to someone like Urban, who was still, like, coming up in the world. Like, he's had some big roles, but he's still, like, trying to find his footing as a major star, sacrificing face time on screen and making it a deal breaker that he won't play the role at all unless that helmet stays on. And that was the moment I went, okay, yes, I'm not only on board with you playing this character, but I have a feeling if they agree to you in that stipulation, everybody must be on board to that level with this character and this source material that they are going to make something really cool. And that's, in my opinion, exactly what we got with Dredd. I don't know. What do you like about Dredd, Cargill?
Everything. What do I like about Dredd? Jesus Christ.
I just realized I've been blabbing for a while, so I was seeding the floor.
I've been letting you go. You know, before we get into that, I want to talk about Carl Urban, because Carl Urban is interesting, and it was rewatching Dredd recently for this episode that really tipped me off, because Urban's someone I've been pulling for a long time. I've run into him a couple of times because he's come to Austin several times. Everyone I know that knows him says he's just an awesome guy. He really, like, when he announced that, because he said that at the red screening at Fantastic Fest, that he was not taking the helmet off, the crowd went nuts, you know, because you have a bunch of comic book nerds there who are like, holy fuck, this guy gets it. Finally, somebody taking on a comic book character role that gets it. And sure enough, he fucking got it. And I've been pulling for him, and he's just never caught.
Yeah.
And I was watching this that I realized why he hasn't caught.
Oh, okay.
Because it's not his time yet.
Interesting.
The problem with Carl Urban is Carl Urban is too young. Carl Urban is like Jack Palance or Lee Marvin.
Wow.
You look at him and look at him in these roles. He's the alpha fucking male. But he's so young and good-looking right now, just like Jack Palance was and Lee Marvin was and, Charles Bronson in his early days. He needs another 10 years of sun. He needs a little wrinkle to him. He needs a little gruffness.
A little more hard drinking and hard living, perhaps?
And he is going to be like Denzel fucking Washington.
Interesting.
You know, he is going to be that hardcore badass guy that you get when you need a really badass villain, or you need the badass sergeant running the platoon. Like, that's who Carl Urban is. And he's a fantastic actor with a wonderful range who does, you know, he's great as Bones in Star Trek. He's awesome here as fucking Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
Like, he just pushes Olivia Thirlby around in the best way without ever laying a finger on her. Like, you know, just, he knocks people the fuck around. Just pure machismo, and several of his roles, he's always brings something different to each of his characters. There isn't a Carl Urban-ness to all of it,
right?
Which is like several of these other old school actors. But, you know, he, in 10, 15 years, he's going to be the guy that you see in fucking everything as the badass older guy. And you're going to be, oh my God, this is the guy who played Bones in the Star Trek movies. And this was, oh God, have you ever seen Dredd when he was young? Oh my God, fucking great. And this is that movie that really shows you how committed he is to doing great work and making great movies, as opposed to having everybody see him, recognize him, and trying to get more work that way. And this is the type of commitment that you see from those actors who work until they're fucking 85 and just can't remember their lines anymore. Like, this is, Carl Urban is a guy who I honestly believe is going to be around for a long time, is going to be a much bigger star as an older actor than he ever was as the young guy. And so that was, in rewatching this, I was just like, no, he's going to be around and still doing this stuff. And we may never see another Dredd movie, but fingers crossed. They're trying, and he wants to make one. But he's going to be around doing crazy shit like this for a long time. In fact, I'm just throwing this out there, Carl, if you're out there listening 15 years from now, I'm going to make the Tango and Cash remake. I'm going to get you two rats and build you a little plastic maze.
Tango.
Cash.
We can't. Not every discussion can devolve into a Tango and Cash reference.
Why can it not? Why can we not just perpetually do Tango and Cash references for the rest?
Because
of our
if
days?
We wanted to be one note, we would be Stallone in the '90s, and that's not who we are, Cargill. We are the Dread now.
I am the Cash. See how I?
No, I like it. I like it a lot. It was very
I think
clever.
Since we're referencing a Stallone movie,
yeah.
Maybe last week during the Rocketeer was not so apropos, but that's
incidentally funny. Apropos, a word Stallone can't say. Very strange.
Howard. This movie, man, this movie is just balls to the fucking wall.
And it starts off establishing a lot of the same facts that Judge Dredd did. And I have to say, after reading some of the comic books and doing some research, I understand now that Judge Dredd wasn't as completely removed from the comics as I thought it was. It just doesn't use the source material in a way that's effective.
No, in fact, what was odd is the night that I saw Judge Dredd, I saw it back to back with Desperado. And they're almost the same fucking movie. And it was so weird.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, you have this guy who's ultra violent, you know, getting caught up with in this crime thing, and then the enemy, you know, the big boss man turns out to be his brother, and they have to, you know, fight it out at the end, and one man has to kill his brother.
Which is funny, because to me, Judge Dredd is so similar to Demolition Man that he did 2 years earlier. Like, a lot of the same plot points are even hit, and it's like, wait a minute. Did you just do a Demolition Man sequel and put Judge Dredd on top of it?
One of those movies is good.
One of those movies is good, and one of them is Judge Dredd. But the plot of Dredd...
And those are two different movies, for those of you that didn't
yes,
like
that. Yes, if you're not catching on, we're talking about two films. Dredd, Judge Dredd, two films. Dredd establishes, once again, that this is a post-apocalyptic wasteland where megacities have sprung up. I think there's like six of them total. And this is Mega City 1, where our story takes place. Mega City 1 is basically the entire Eastern Seaboard. So you have about 800 million people living in one city. And they live in these mega blocks, which I looked up and had nothing to do with Lego knockoffs, but are these big, like, massive high-rise apartment buildings that are
made out of Lego knockoffs.
Made out of Lego knockoffs. And the story here involves Dredd and his rookie, judge Anderson. That he's training, Anderson, played by Olivia Thirlby, who we do not see enough of in movies. These are two people we don't see enough of in movies, Carl Urban and Olivia Thirlby. And they get called out to this mega block called Peach Trees, where there has been a triple homicide. And as soon as they get in there, they arrest... the thing about Anderson is she is a telepath. So she's got this extrasensory perception, and she knows right away that one of the guys that they arrest is the person who murdered the three people laying down on the ground. So as they're trying to transport him out, the boss queen, the queen bee of Peachtrees, the crime lordess, played by Lena Headey, Mama...
Who most of you will know as...
Cersei Lannister.
Yeah, Cersei Lannister from Game of Thrones.
And if you don't know her from that, I have one word for you. Shame.
Shame.
Shame. Shame. You should know her from that. Shame.
Dong.
Well, it turns out that this person that they've arrested is very important to Mama, and his being interrogated is very bad for her. So she locks the building down and basically says that no one is going to get a moment's peace until the two judges that are in this building are dead. And so begins this sort of Game of Death style, rising up to meet the bad guy, fighting through level after level after level of scumbag. That's our movie. Very simplistic plot-wise. And I think that's one of the things that really allows for the movie to be more stylistic. It allows for the performances to really shine, that they don't... This is not a complicated movie. This is not a complicated plot. In fact, this isn't even the only movie with this plot that we got that year. Because... And this, I want to talk about this. There was I won't even really say controversy, but there was a lot of talk about the fact that Dredd and The Raid have very, very, very similar plots. And that actually led to people accusing one movie of ripping off the other. And it was,
and it's only being the people making those accusations are people who don't know how movies work.
Yes,
because a movie that came out like 5 months later did not fucking rip that movie off.
It would have been impossible,
especially with that level of special effects.
Yeah, I mean the level of special effects in Dread, the level of stunt work in The Raid. Like, there's no way either movie had time to rip the other one.
If I remember correctly, Dread shot first.
No, actually, Han did.
Yeah, no, Han was the only one to shoot, actually.
Hey, I like it. I like it. But, Han shot only, motherfucker.
Yeah, Greedo doesn't shoot in Star Wars.
Greedo didn't get a chance to shoot.
No, but I believe that actually Dredd was the first one into production, and The Raid then came after that, but because The Raid was not a special effect heavy movie as, you know, as Dredd was, which Jesus Christ it was.
Yeah.
It managed to get into theaters a few months sooner. But then again, The Raid wasn't released wide. So it wasn't really that big of a deal. It was just people like who pay attention to foreign films. And the thing is both films are very good.
Yeah.
It depends on what you like in your movies as to which one is your favorite and which one you revisit. I know that a lot of film critics lost their fucking minds for The Raid. Personally, I'm a Dread man. But then again, this is written by Alex Garland.
Yes, absolutely.
Which you mentioned, it's not a complicated movie. That's what Alex Garland does best. Oh my God. He takes these very simple ideas and creates these great characters in these great situations that you are just like deep in. I mean, this is the guy who did 28 Days Later and Sunshine and Never Let Me Go. And
just directed
Ex Machina,
his directorial debut, which was stellar.
Oh, he's fucking brilliant. I love everything he does. He's just a brilliant, brilliant fucking writer.
Also wrote the novel upon which the Danny Boyle, The Beach,
yes,
is based on. So, yeah, a guy who is wickedly talented, and I agree with you 100%. He allows for little nuances to be sprinkled throughout the movie that you may not even notice because you're just having so much fun with how it's very streamlined. And I think it's a clear trajectory. You go up. Like, Dredd is down here. He needs to get the person up there. He's locked in this high rise. The only way to go is up. So the movie paints a clear trajectory that I think is really what helps with the pacing.
I would also argue that Dredd is the only movie made in 3D that I really, really wish I could only ever watch in 3D.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, 3D is just something that's added to a film, you know, to make a little extra box office, to flesh it out a little bit. 3D was used expertly. Yeah. In the making of this film, it is a gorgeous fucking movie to watch in 3D.
It's a visual orgy. This movie, and what I love so much about, like, stylistically, like, here's what they do stylistically in the movie to, I think, justify the use of 3D, is they work in this, and this is Alex Garland, working into the script this drug.
Slow-mo.
Slow-mo that's become all the rage in Mega City, that makes your brain move at like 1/10 the speed it normally does. So what you have is this hyper-stylized, these drug trips that kind of make Zack Snyder's slow motion look like it's still blazing fast. Like, and the thing is that it's not used to intensify, like, or make someone look even more spectacular than they are as they're accomplishing a punch or something. Like, it's not used to, like, aggrandize characters. What it's used for is to kind of make the violence even more viscerally upsetting
and shocking,
and very shocking,
and at the same time capturing what was great about those Dread comics and that ultra violence, to where you're fixated on the violence and it's just there. It's in your face.
Like a panel.
Sometimes
in the comics.
Literally. Like, there's a shot in this movie where a guy gets shot through the face.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just, it makes you wince.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's rough. You're not like, fuck yeah. Like, you know, it's like, holy shit, dude.
Yeah.
Ah.
Like, you always, at every point of this movie, you are behind Dread. But they don't really glorify his actions. In fact, they take steps to, while you're looking at something that looks gorgeous, you're also looking at something that's very unsettling, very hard to watch, and so Well, I mean, I guess I don't know this for sure because I'm not a doctor. I don't know if that has come across yet in the run of this show, but I'm not a doctor. I don't know anatomically what it looks like when you shoot someone through the cheek.
I'm not a doctor.
But it seems pretty anatomically accurate what we're seeing. Like, that cheek explodes, and then there's just, like, rows of teeth underneath. It's just, it's horrifying. And yet, at the same time, it looks so amazing that you have a hard time reconciling the, like, the visuals function, like, to make it impossible for you to blend the two things in your head, the horrific violence that is just so highly stylized and gorgeous to look at and really does justify the 3D. And it's magnificent.
Yeah. And then on top of that, it's used in a story aspect in which this slow-mo is used on people right before they're tortured or murdered.
Yeah.
Just to make the... make them suffer more. It's just like, oh fuck, dude.
Yeah.
You know, there's the initial concept where, you know, they hit someone with slow-mo and throw them over the side.
Yeah.
But they hit someone with slow-mo before they skin them.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh fuck you.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And yet
Christ.
Somehow, and here's what I probably am just not equipped enough to put my finger on. At the same time, none of that feels exploitative. Like, at no point in the movie do you feel like the graphic violence of this film is done just to be exploitation or is done just to make audiences... Like, it's not like torture porn.
No. And I think that's what really, really works about this movie is the fact that it really does capture those 2000 AD comics in that they're trying to highlight... what about this universe scares us, not what we want to celebrate.
Yeah.
This is not a future you want to live in. You do not want to live in a future where these police officers are the law.
Yeah.
Especially later on in this film when you see how easily corrupted they are.
Yeah.
That they are not all Judge Dredd. That Judge Dredd is Judge Dredd. And he is a being that believes purely in justice, not in good, not in evil, in justice and in the law. And for those of you D&D gamers out there, he is pure lawful neutral. It is, you know, sorry, I don't care if you're a good guy or not. You just broke the law. I gave you your chance. I'm going to fucking shoot you now.
Yeah.
And it's, but man, this movie just, the thing that works is it just never stops being fun.
Yes.
While it's doing this, but it's never, that's the thing, is what's fun about it isn't the celebration of violence. What's fun about it is the tension that's created and the situation that the actors are in, because they go into on a simple call, on a routine call, and then everything gets locked down
on a routine murder death kill. It's not even Judge Dredd. Yeah. And they go, and I want to go back to something you just said about the comic book and this being a future you don't want to live in. When you think about the fact that this comic was developed in 76 and its first issue was released in February of 77, that's pre-Star Wars. That is before May of 77, before Star Wars is released. And prior to that, prior to Star Wars being released, science fiction, at least in cinema, was very dour. It was all of the sci-fi movies in theaters before Star Wars came out weren't escapism. They were, this is a future nobody wants to live in. You know, these are things like Soylent Green. These are things like The Omega Man. These are things like Logan's Run. Like, these are movies depicting futures nobody wants to fucking live in.
Dystopian.
Dystopian, exactly.
Very, very dystopian. Well, and I mean, that's what happens, you know, this is, we're talking about, this is an era, it's just after Vietnam, you know, we're starting to see major cities start to crumble and fall apart. The generation that had come before had gone on to fight this great war and get this great victory. And then there were a number of other wars that a number of other countries participated in, none of which went well.
Yeah.
And, you know, Hollywood was churning out lots of really dark black stuff because we were a country that had been lied to by our president that had gone through a war that we got nothing out of. And the culture was just dour.
Yeah.
And all of science fiction was just dark and brooding for the most part. The idea of adventure, like we were talking about last week, had gone by the wayside. That was a nostalgic thing for a different time, and that was goofy and silly and fuck that. Those heroes didn't exist anymore, and Judge Dredd was, you know, the new thing, and this was the beginning of anti-heroism, which, you know, Judge Dredd really was what tipped off Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns, which then tipped off Wolverine becoming, you know, a major character in the Marvel comics, and then tipped off the creation of characters like Cable and Deadpool, and led towards this whole, and you know, the Punisher becoming a hero. This all came from Judge Dredd. This all came from this guy who was a hero, but was really fucked up. Like, there was something very wrong with him. But, you know, and what happened in anti-heroism is it ultimately became a celebration of violence. And it was where they got that wrong. And I think that's what really works in this movie, is the violence is never really celebrated.
No.
Some of it's kind of fun, but it's always designed to make you wince. Mm-hmm. Like, you are never supposed to enjoy the splatter of it.
Yeah. But I think all that's really important to think about when you try and wrap your mind around why it is that audiences didn't embrace this movie. And I think, you know, what we were talking about with kind of the domino effect of, you know, sci-fi in the 70s, the creation of Judge Dredd, the creation of The Dark Knight Returns and Wolverine and Deadpool, and all these things kind of spiraling out. And the Punisher you mentioned, and it made me realize, like, audiences, cinematic audiences have never embraced the Punisher either.
Well, the Punisher, and I've said it several times, and I get a lot of hell from people for it, the Punisher's not a very good character.
Well, but my point being that I think one of the things that may have hurt Dredd is that I actually think Dredd as a character, and this movie especially, even though it is born of a different era, there are things in our current climate politically and just societally that make this character relevant again. And that's a very sad thing. But, you know, we have, like, the whole NSA thing, and whether or not we're actually living in a police state and all of the rampant police violence, like, Dredd as a character is every bit as relevant now as he was when he was created for different reasons. But what is interesting to me is I think that relevance got pushed to the side because Dredd came out months after The Avengers, and The Avengers is the culmination of a Marvel Cinematic Universe that has an entirely opposite philosophy of the kind of things that the character of Dredd is going for. And I think once audiences embraced that and really got behind it, much like with the Punisher, it just became a character that it got hard for most audiences to go superhero and also political satire, or superhero and also statement piece, you know, whatever you want to assign to it. There's something deeper going on in Dredd than just a superhero movie that has very strong things to say about violence, about who's really in control of society. Like, there's a lot of deeper meaning. And again, I credit Alex Garland for flushing those things out, all while giving us a movie that's a lot of fun to watch.
Well, I think the performance of this movie, the reason this movie didn't quite catch, was twofold. One's obvious, one has to do with just timing. I mean, the first and foremost, you know, it had a poisonous name. You know, there was that really terrible, you know, movie that people remember. And that's how people know Judge Dredd. It's like, oh, wait, they're remaking that really bad movie from the 90s?
Yeah.
You know, why would you do that? It's not even 20 years old. Why would you remake that movie or make a sequel to that movie? What is this?
Yeah.
Secondly, this is a rated R science fiction action film. This should have been released in March. March is when you can release movies like this. This is when March is when The Matrix played, when The Watchmen came out, when people are hungry for blockbusters.
Speaking of hungry, you know what other franchise debuted in March and has been killing March ever since? The fucking Hunger Games. Yeah. Violent sci-fi.
Yeah. No, people love their spectacle, and they love their off-brand spectacle after they've gone through, you know, because you get into Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving is family movies, and then you get a couple of things in December, but that area is mostly, you know, Oscar, early Oscar films, and then you get your big Christmas release, and then your Christmas dumping ground, and then January and February are mostly dumping grounds until Valentine's Day when you get your first, like, big release, but usually that's, you know, a romantic film to capitalize on that, and then starting after that, you start getting good movies again, and March is the open season for off-brand genre.
Because in September, there's summer movie fatigue.
Yeah.
In September, we're tired of all the big budget stuff. We're like, and it's not like we don't want to see them anymore, but like it's physically, especially, you know, I will say that it's colored a little bit by the fact that, you know, I've been a critic for a while and having to go to all of these screenings, not getting to pick and choose as much as, you know, most people probably do. But it is, you get weary after a while of like every big spectacle movie.
Well, audiences get weary and they don't have money because their kids just went back to school.
Yep.
Or went to college. And so it's a, I mean, Labor Day is the absolute worst. The absolute worst box office weekend of the year. And then the weeks after that, you know, the weeks leading into that dip off really badly, and the weeks after that start to come up again, and that's where Dread fell. And of course, Dread like opened to what, like $10 million?
It did not do well. And it's funny you mentioned that, like Back to the Future was originally going to open on Labor Day weekend, and they fought to get that movie released in July. And I think about the trajectory of that movie and how well it did. I'm like, would that have been different if it had come out on Labor Day like it was originally going to? And I, you know, when the movie came out, and I know I've said this a lot, and I don't mean to pick on them, but I don't think Lionsgate has a fucking clue how to market their movies. I have seen it time and time again where they have had great movies that have just not caught on with people, and I look at their advertising that they run for it, and I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you, like, the Cabin in the Woods, for example, it's like, why are you giving this away in the trailer? Why are you showing this? Or with this movie, why are you releasing Dread in September? Like, so much about the... It just seems like they have certain movies they know exactly how to market, and everything else, it's the Wild West for them. They have no idea what the fuck they're doing. And I don't mean to put all of the blame on their shoulders, but this movie could have benefited from better marketing like nobody's business. It is a solid product. It has the action.
It's a solid product, but how do you sell it? That's the thing, is it's such a...
Well, you don't dump it in September, for one thing.
No. I think the release date was really what crippled it. I think had it come out in March of 2013, now I can't remember what was released in March of 2013 opposite it. So there may have been something that actually clobbered it. I mean, that may have been probably a Hunger Games movie. It may have been The Hunger Games, unless that was maybe March of 2012. And maybe 2013.
March of 2012 is when it would have come out. Because this came out in September of 2012.
Well, yeah, but I don't think it was ready yet, which is why The Raid beat it. Because I think The Raid came out in March.
Oh, The Raid absolutely did. Yeah.
It just didn't connect. But it was a hard sell. Like, how do you sell this? I mean,
I would take a page out of something you just said, and I would market this as, this is not the Dread you've seen. I would run almost like not a smear campaign necessarily, but just like a very like a call to action. Like, this is a completely different Dread. Like, this is not the Dread that you know. Like, something to get people excited about it and really distance them. Because one of the things, I mean, we've talked about, and when we did our Tango and Cash episode, and we've talked
about Tango
Cash, we talk about how at this point in the 90s, when Judge Dredd came out, Stallone had way too much fucking power.
Oh, yeah.
Way too much power. Like, it's still unclear who actually directed Tango and Cash. But one of the things that really hurt Judge Dredd the movie is that Stallone got it in his head that it was a comedy. Nobody else did. Stallone got it in his head that it was a comedy.
I don't know, maybe Rob Schneider.
Well, but Rob, that character is in the comics, but that character in the comics is not a dopey little sidekick doing impressions all the time. He's like the leader of the mutants. Like, he's like the leader of the scumbag underground. You know, he's more like the Dennis Leary character in Demolition Man. And so, you know, Stallone is pushing like more and more comedic, like Stallone sees Rob Schneider do an impression of him, suddenly that's in the movie. Like, you know, and suddenly they're pushing for not only are they pushing, like, they originally got an NC-17 rating, they knocked that down to R, and then they fought hard to get a PG-13. Like, they were moving away from what Dredd was supposed to be because Stallone got it in his head. And it's almost the exact opposite of what happened with Tango and Cash, where he tried to make that movie more serious.
Yeah.
So
and again, Stallone wanted it to be light.
Yeah. So
it was the director that wanted it serious. Oh, that's, Stallone yeah, wanted that's, it to be a comedy.
Yeah.
Like Stallone was like gunning for, he was shooting straight up the middle with the movies, which is why that era of his movies is amongst his worst, which is why that's what killed his career for a long time.
Yeah. This movie, on the other hand, finds the perfect balance of remaining true to the character, having something to say, still being incredibly enjoyable as an action film. Like the action set pieces in this, there's really only one set piece, but they find every nook and cranny, every crevice of that building to create action sequences out of it. And it's the economy of the action sequences is really impressive, because when you step back and look at it, there's not a lot that they're doing, but everything they do is done so well and so viscerally and so with so much impact that one of my favorite things about it actually is that you see multiple judges. Like between like Diane Lane and Sylvester Stallone are really the only two judges that you see kind of in the field in Judge Dredd. In this film, there's that great scene where the three other judges show up, and then you have like that conflict between the judges. And there's one point where I was watching a fight sequence, and because neither one of them took their helmets off, I couldn't for a couple of swings tell who was Dredd. But it didn't matter because it was just such a brutal, angry fist fight that ends with Dredd taking the butt of his gun and breaking the guy's neck with it. And it's just, it's upsetting again, but it's so well choreographed and has so much impact that, I mean, and the whole movie's like that. And they find very deliberate points to use that slow motion. It's not gratuitous. No. It's not a Zack Snyder movie. They find the exact perfect moments to use that to give the movie a visual identity without feeling like a gimmick.
Yeah.
And all of these things work so well, and all of these, and then there's all these little references, like things that are written on the wall, like the fatties and all these other references to the comic books. And then on top of that, you have Lena Headey, who is magnificent.
Oh, yeah.
As the villainess.
Yeah, no, she's someone who's really kind of, you know, come into her own in, like, the best way. Like, again, like with Carl Urban, she's one of those actresses who, as a young actress, never kind of caught on with anyone, that once she started getting older and doing the older evil kind of matron roles, she's just, like, one of the greatest villainous actors working today.
Absolutely.
She's just a great fucking villain. You want to hate her.
You know who
constantly.
She is? She's Meg Foster. She's the Meg Foster of today.
Yeah.
She's that actress who's so good at being bad that that's kind of just what you expect now when you see her.
Yeah, I kind of don't want to see her do anything but being evil, just being evil in different ways. And the thing is she's not Cersei Lannister in this.
No, it's a completely different type of villain.
She's a very different kind of villain, and is unafraid to let herself be uglied up, like just to kind of drive it home. She's great. She's really fantastic. Also, you know who's in this, like in a very small and cool role, is Domhnall Gleeson
Domhnall Gleeson. Yeah.
You
think about it, also turns up in Ex Machina.
Yes.
So this is obviously where the two of them work together for the first time.
Yeah. And he plays a really, I mean, this is what's really cool is that there's this guy who's the techie. And you see this role in every fucking movie, you know, where the villain has a techie doing all his stuff. But here, she's really kind of fucked the techie over. Like, he doesn't want to be doing this.
Yeah. He's a tragic character.
He is. And it's, why would anybody want to work for this person? Oh, well, because he has no choice.
Yeah.
And she's fucked him up. And this movie is so wonderfully dark. But the thing is, what I think works about this movie, going back to something I was saying earlier about the Punisher, I'm not a big fan of the Punisher as a character. And Dredd has some of those same problems. Dredd is a very one-dimensional character. There is not a lot of depth to Dredd.
No.
There's not a lot to do with Dredd. And this is why Olivia Thirlby's Anderson is so vital to this story, because she's our way in. she's our access point to Dredd. And she is really kind of Dredd. Dredd is kind of the protagonist of this movie, but it really comes down to it's really about Anderson's journey, because Dredd's journey is just about survival. Like, his character is just, he walks into a bad situation, he's going to walk out because he's Judge Dredd. The question is how many people is he going to have to kill along the way?
Right.
The one character you really care about that you don't know if they're going to make it through or not is Anderson. And Anderson, from the beginning, is the question, is Anderson going to become a cop? Is she going to make it through her first day with Judge Dredd? And that whole storyline is dealt with so well. Just so fucking well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's she's almost like that character in the army platoon that like finds religion by the end of the movie and just like wants nothing to do with it. It's a very interesting, like, she has a very interesting arc, because then she comes back around and you realize that she's going to make a fantastic judge. And the one shred of, I won't say humanity, but like the one moment where we feel like Dredd, there's more to Dredd than meets the eye, is when he passes her. Despite the fact that everything he's told her throughout the course of the evaluation is that, you know, the offenses that she's committed
are instant fails.
Are instant fails, absolutely.
But he's also guilty of them.
Yes.
Like, he's lost his gun, too. Like, that's the thing, is the minute she loses her gun, she's like, oh, I'm done. He loses his, too. Like, there's nothing that happens to her that didn't happen to him.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think the two of them together, I think you're right. I think she's a vital character for sort of serving as the emotional soundboard for the film, since you're not going to get much of that out of Dredd. But at the same time, Carl Urban knows exactly who this character is.
Yeah.
He knows exactly how to play this character to make him likable despite everything, despite the lack of emotion, despite the fact that he's basically a tool of a totalitarian government.
Despite, like, the fact that he's a fucking asshole.
He's a total asshole. So, yeah, I love everything about this movie. I think works. And it's so frustrating to me that even a movie like this, which, again, like, there's just so many references. Like, there's a reference to a Fergie memorial, which is the character Rob Schneider plays, who's also from the comics. You know, they make references to Judge Hershey. They make references to Drock, which was the word in the comic books that they used to replace a lot of the profanity, kind of like the frack would later become in Battlestar Galactica, that kind of situation. Like, all of these references and all of this deep, abiding love for the source material, and a movie that just gets it so fucking right. And the audience just wasn't there.
Yeah.
And the audience that was there has been very vocal and very passionate and starting all of these social media campaigns and just desperately wanting to get this sequel off the ground. So I guess to kind of close this out, my question I want to ask you, Cargill, do you think that we will see a sequel to Dredd that stars Carl Urban?
I think we might eventually.
Mm-hmm.
I think what it really comes down to is... what happens over the next few years with cinema. Like, I mean, something I've been talking about recently is I really feel like we're beginning the push towards realism again. The mm-hmm. pendulum is swinging back, and I think movies like this are going to be left by the wayside. And they're not going to be sure things, as they are right now. And we're going to see, you know, what we're seeing right now, which is people want brands that are established. And at some point, someone's going to go, hey, you know what's built up a lot of steam over the last few years? Dredd. People remember the new Dredd more than they remember Judge Dredd. So we can do another one of those and see if that works out. But also, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, you know what I honestly think is probably going to happen with Dredd? Eventually, Netflix is going to...
pick up it as a series?
No, just make a Dredd movie. Netflix is starting to make its own movies.
Yeah.
And the kind of budgets that they're shelling out is easily Dredd.
Yeah.
And Dredd did very well for Netflix and did very well on Netflix. And if the numbers are there, if the because Netflix is the only one that knows what those numbers are, but Netflix always looks at those numbers, and you know, like, there was a TV show that got picked up recently and got picked up for a lot of money, and everyone's like, oh man, why didn't Netflix get that? And they asked Netflix, and they're like, because we looked at the numbers, and we know that it would never make its money back.
Mm-hmm.
But there is that might be the way we see something like Dredd. We might see Dredd is a, you know, the sequel to Dredd is a Netflix original movie. I think that's more likely than anything else. I don't think Lionsgate's going to dump money into it.
Nor do I really want them to at this point. And I know I sound bitter, and I have no affiliation with that studio. They've never done anything to me personally, but I have watched them take movies that I have really loved and just not know what the fuck to do with them and not support them the way that they should. And I just think that at a certain point, they've kind of lost their way in this, you know.
What I will say is that Lionsgate has been a lot more experimental in the type of genre they give us. And as a result, their marketing department is given Herculean tasks of trying to sell something that, you know, isn't very easy to sell to audiences right now. You know, the real problem we're seeing today that we don't see, like with classics that we often talk about, you know, you had asked earlier in this episode, if Back to the Future was released on Labor Day. I think Back to the Future still would have done great, because the thing is, you know, in Back to the Future was 1985. You didn't go and just see a movie on opening weekend. And if it wasn't out, if you missed it within the first 2 or 3 weeks, you just waited for it on video. No, the movies played and circulated the single screen theaters for months. And sometimes if they were really good, years. Mm-hmm. So a movie like that, you would see a month later and could still, you know, do really well. Sometimes, you know, they would release a film 2 or 3 times to give it its chance, something you never, ever see these days. In fact, the last film I remember getting there's a couple in recent years that they've tried to. I remember they tried 3 times with Shawshank Redemption. They released that 3 times. They're like, it's going to take. This movie's really great. And nobody would go and fucking see that movie. Now everyone's fucking seen it. But I really, you know, movies today, we have a problem with the fact that because we have just about every movie ever made at our fingertips, we have too much choice. And as a result of too much choice, we don't have that thing that I had growing up where I went to the single screen theater that was in my neighborhood and I watched whatever was fucking playing.
Yeah.
Like if, you know, I remember one night I went because I was going to see Wes Craven's Shocker and they hadn't gotten the print in. So they ran the night before's movie, which was Always by Steven Spielberg. And I was like, it's the plane movie. Fuck it. I want to watch a movie tonight. And so I went and saw this movie and then loved Always. And then went the next night and saw Shocker. But you saw whatever was there. So a movie like Dredd could really catch on where it's like, what do we want to see tonight? Well, what's playing? Now it's like, what do you want to see tonight? I don't know. What kind of genre? Let's start there. And you kind of, you know, weed down until you often get to either something you've already seen or something that is almost exactly like something you've seen, which is the problem we have right now.
Yeah.
Is that people are like, I want to watch something like Paranormal Activity, and then start looking for something like Paranormal Activity, as opposed to...
It's the you may also like mentality.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and instead of
Netflix
just going,
recommends.
Yeah, I want to watch a horror movie, so I'll watch whatever horror movie's playing at the movie theater. So anyone who wants to see a science fiction action movie, you know, you can watch any science fiction action movie ever made in history, or you can go see this movie that might or might not be a sequel to a really bad movie from the 90s. I don't know. So movies like this will continue to fall by the wayside, and hopefully will catch on at some point. Honestly, I hope we'll see it. I hope we'll see it in some way, shape, or form.
Because you know what hasn't been done yet? The Dark Judges and Judge Death.
Well, yeah.
From a parallel universe where... or another dimension where being alive in and of itself is a crime. I want to see Judge Dredd versus Judge Death. Like, that needs to fucking happen. I will give any amount of money that I have. I will donate an organ. I don't care.
All right. So, owners of the Judge Dredd copyright, there's $12 committed right now.
Hey. $47, thank you very much. I'm moving up in the world.
$47 committed to the making of Judge Dredd versus Judge Death.
And one somewhat functioning kidney, whatever you need. I just want to see this movie. I think it's one of the more interesting facets of the comics that they haven't been able to do yet, and I want to see it.
judgment time.
Let's finish this.
And speaking of the comics, that brings us to our junk food pairing. Very much like Alex Garland in this particular production, very much like Dredd, I'm reaching deep into the comics for this one. There was a short run called The Cursed Earth, in which Judge Dredd finds himself in the middle of a real fast food war between McDonald's and Burger King. And during the course of that run, Ronald McDonald himself murders lackluster employees. Like,
is this where that joke from Demolition Man comes from?
It may be where the fast food wars
where Taco Bell wins.
Yes.
Now all restaurants are Taco Bells.
I told you, Judge Dredd, the movie from the 90s, feels a lot like Demolition Man. Maybe there's a little bit of vice versa in there as well. So I would encourage you to start your own fast food war between McDonald's and Burger King. Eat as much of both of those as you can.
Or just go to Whataburger.
Or just go to Whataburger if you live in Texas, because it's better anyway.
Triple meat, triple cheese with bacon, jalapeno on Texas toast.
Now you're just making me hungry.
No onion. What a size the fries. Get a little bit of spicy ketchup.
Don't be found
nice big vanilla milkshake.
Don't be found guilty of living in a place that doesn't have a Whataburger. That's all I'm saying. That's like 20 years in the ISO cubes.
Mama's not the law. I'm the law.
And that's going to do it for this week's show. Hope you guys have enjoyed it. And please, if you haven't seen Dredd, go out and watch it. Let's get that campaign going again. I don't care. Let's mobilize once again. A call to action. Let's get this Dredd sequel made. I want to see the Dark Judges before I shuffle off this mortal coil and become one myself. But I'm Brian. You can find me on Twitter at BryGuySalisbury or on Facebook, facebook.com/BryanSalisburyCritic or at oneofus.net, my home away from home. Lots of great geek podcasts and blogs for every taste. Cargill, where can people find you online?
You can find me at facebook.com/MassaWyrm. That's MassaWyrm. Or at twitter.com/MassaWyrm.
And you can also follow us on Twitter at JunkFoodCinema. You can like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/JunkFoodCinema. You can also get old episodes on Stitcher as well as on iTunes. Please subscribe, 5-star ratings, leave reviews. All that stuff is great. We really appreciate that. But we're asking, it's a request. It is by no means mandatory. It is not the law, because as we all know,
I'm the law.